Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. And I'm your host today, Al Warren, as most days, and Martini Maker is here.
I am right here. Thanks, Al.
He's just getting the cocktails ready. We're going to need them. We're talking to a guy from Canada. And he's written some horror. The book we're focusing on will be Shelter for the Damned. And the guest is the author, Mike Thorne. Thank you for being here, Mike.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Do I get one of those martinis, too? Is there any way we can that happen?
Well, we'd love to, but you're on lockdown, so.
That's right.
That's it. You know, it's Easter, lockdown. It's all over. How is that for a horror writer like you? You know, when you get into this last year and a bit where, you know, all the crazy stuff going on. I guess most of it's across the border, the craziness, but still, with the shutdown and the pandemic and people dying and all this sort of stuff, does that sort of seep into your writing?
It has in some ways. I mean, to be honest, for a large part of the lockdown, I was struggling with writer's block in a big way. So having deadlines for anthology invites was a blessing because then I had to get the words in. I wrote a recent story that's going to be the first piece in my collection, Peel Back and See, which comes out in the fall. And that one kind of uses the pandemic as a background or as an environment for the piece. So
do you think that's good?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't want to write a COVID zombie story or something like that. I think that would be pretty tacky. But in this case, it just became a kind of organic backdrop because I try to write as much as I can through contemporary settings and feelings. So in that case, it felt right.
Yeah, isn't it kind of hard to tell how it's going to turn out? That's kind of a problem.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And I certainly wouldn't want to set out to write a COVID story or something. It wasn't at the forefront of the piece. It just was the situation within which the protagonist found himself, because that's where I am. So I'm finding I'm writing a lot of stories with people being absorbed into screens or images and things like that, because, you know, I'm not getting the regular social contact I would in a pre-pandemic world.
That's interesting. So you think it's the social contact that actually influences, maybe even the lack of it is what kind of gives you a block?
I think it's part of it. I mean, I'm very introverted and very insular, but there's something about that sudden and abrupt severing of most social ties that seems to have affected me. I mean, I do Zoom hangouts with friends and socially distanced hangouts every now and then, and I teach online, but just even teaching online, you feel like you're teaching into the void. Most of the students don't have their webcams on, and getting people to engage is really difficult. So it's just shifting the whole paradigm of how I engage with the world, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I understand totally. I think most of us do, unless you don't think it's real. Then you're sort of living somewhere else and you sort of have different things going on around, right? So it maybe not affect you. But most of the writers we've talked to, which is surprising to me, most of them seem to have had no problem with this. And in fact, anything they've said they're able to write more. I'm like you. I tended to get a lot of blocking going on.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed the solitude. I feel like I'm reading a lot more. But yeah, in terms of writing productivity, I do think there's been a bit of a dip. I'm finding my way back into it, and there are workarounds, but it's definitely more work. I think there's this kind of lethargy that sets in with the sameness of every day, for me anyway.
Yeah, well, for me, I just feel like it's forced. So, some of the books I have contracted for publishers, I've just been going through the motions and doing it, but they don't mean as much to me, which is so that doesn't mean don't buy them, people. It just means it just means I'm less in touch with them. How's that? Boy, I'm blowing it for myself here. Wow. So how did it start for you? You getting into this writing world, and I mean this in the part of where you actually, what was the one point when you actually felt confident enough to decide, well, I can write and get something published?
Good question. I think those are two different questions. The question about when was I confident enough to write? I think I always had a kind of propensity to write. So for as long as I can remember, I've always been writing. But in terms of submitting for publication, early in my undergrad, I was writing some pretty shoddy poetry, and I had the youthful naivete to send some of that stuff out. My first short story sale was not until 2015. I sold a story called Long Man to an anthology called Creepy Campfire Stories for Grownups. And throughout my graduate degree, I wrote a ton of short fiction, and it became a kind of outlet for me to process a lot of the dread and anxiety I felt surrounding academic environments and just the contemporary state of things. But interestingly, Shelter for the Damned, I wrote the first draft before any of my short fiction. I wrote most of the rough draft in my early 20s and then just reworked it substantially over time. So I kind of started backwards. I started with a novel and then, you know, dove into the short form.
Do you have an outlook? Like, how do I say this? So when you're writing a book, is there something you want to get across to people that isn't related to the story?
I never go into a piece with a certain message in mind. Usually I think my concerns and my fears and my interests will leak their way into the fiction organically. So in the case of Shelter for the Damned, for instance, as I continued reworking the novel, I noticed that the book was saying something about kind of prescriptive masculine conditioning and addiction, among other things. And then I tried to allow those ideas to breathe in later drafts. But I usually just start with either images or character or sometimes a scene, and then I just allow the thing to grow from that germ.
So are you, do you write your scenes or your locations as characters themselves?
Sometimes. In Shelter for the Damned, the entity that is known as the Shack is definitely a primary character, and it's the kind of object of conflict in the novel. And I'm very heavily influenced by the Gothic tradition, so I'm interested in the ways in which setting and place can take a central role as character. So it depends on the piece, but definitely some of my work makes use of that.
Pretty interesting. I just wonder, when you're putting together a story and characters, are you putting it together from your own experience, something that you've come across in your life, or is this completely out of the blue and made up?
All of my work is personal to some extent. The degree to which I abstract from my experiences and my memories varies a lot. I have never been lured into the trap of a cosmic entity that takes the form of a shack in a suburban field, resulting in several murders and other hellish events.
Thankfully. You never know.
You never know. That's not something that has happened yet. But, you know, there are ways in which my novel, Shelter for the Damned, does draw on my experiences. I mean, it's set in the suburbs in 2003. That's around the time I would have been Mark's age. And I drew a little bit on my experiences and memories and then infected it with cosmic horror.
Do you find that you're a natural short story writer or more of a natural novelist?
I think short stories come easier for me, but I enjoy both forms. I think it depends on what I want to do. I think part of the reason short stories are easier is because my natural technique is to, I guess you could use the term pants it, so I don't tend to outline very much. So when I'm writing novels, that can be more of a headache because you're dealing with a lot more pages, a lot more characters. So in terms of the editing process, it's a lot more cumbersome with novels. Whereas with short stories, the fixes are usually less of a nightmare. But I like both forms, depending on the piece.
You know, when you wrote Shelter of the Damned, you've got it centered around two teenagers, if I understand that right. Those characters, where do you get them from? And I ask that in the sense of a lot of people that write that we talk to, you know, they describe their characters as their children, or they have a very unusual relationship with their characters. For someone like me that writes just, you know, true crime or nonfiction, what is it for a horror writer like you?
There's always a part of me in any character I write. So the protagonist of Shelter for the Damned was formed a lot on my memories of feeling like I didn't fit in as an adolescent, like I didn't see any place for me in the social systems that were set out. So I looked at the environments and the frameworks in front of me, whether it be school or any kind of social system. I was just like, I don't see myself going anywhere. And I drew a lot on the anxiety and the anger that came from that feeling. And I just tried to put myself back in that place as much as possible. The same is true for the other primary characters in the novel, Scott and Adam and Madeline, all teenagers, but they all come from some aspect of my teenage experience, my teenage memories. Although none of them is me, they all have a fragment of me in them.
Sure, you tell us that now, but but you know, the thing is, there's something that when you say some of you, a little of you is in the character or characters and the story itself, it brings back something from a memory or comes from a memory or whatever. But when you do that, because of what you're writing, it's still, you know, it's dealing with emotion, it's dealing with fear, it's dealing with a lot of feelings. So in a way, I guess you're kind of making yourself vulnerable by writing about your own experiences. Like you're putting some of your own feelings that you had through something and sharing them. Does that sort of make you feel vulnerable when you actually put it out for the public to read?
Always, yeah, absolutely. I think, and my assumption is that most creative people feel that when they put their work out there in the world, especially, you know, I think some creative people say they don't read reviews. I imagine most do. So it's especially vulnerable to be put in the position of reading negative reviews and things like that. I mean, they're there and they're there for a reason. But yeah, it's always extremely nerve-wracking because actually one of the ways I frame my fiction is that it's not an attempt to offend the reader or assault the reader. I think some horror writers actually would describe their work that way. Mine is a kind of defensive process where I'm trying to ward off the things that frighten me or exorcise my demons, clean out my closet, so to speak. So yeah, it's a super vulnerable position to be in. Absolutely.
So you see, that's kind of comes back to the confidence part. So when you actually become a writer like you are and you start actually doing the job well, so to speak, because you have to put yourself into it and put yourself out there. Where does that confidence come from, or what is it that allows you to do that?
I just have to lie to myself and shut out all the negative voices, you know, try to put a stopper in the anxiety, the imposter syndrome, the depression. That's all stuff I have to battle with. But ultimately, I think the thing is, the only difference between someone who writes and makes something out of it and someone who doesn't is that the person who writes does it. So you just, at some point, you have to find a way to shut out all of that noise and just do the work. And that's a big challenge. I don't mean to understate how much of a challenge that is, but yeah, it's just, it's a matter of doing it. And for me, a big way of combating those negative mental forces is to be creatively productive. So it's a kind of, I don't know, a weird circle or something like that.
Yeah. And it never goes away. I mean, I'm 59 here and 20 books out, and I still have the same anxieties, the same imposter syndrome that comes back, the same involvement with critics, so to speak, as I did the very first book. So something to realize that it just never goes away. You're going to die unhappy.
It's all part of the fun.
Yeah. So just so you know, don't think that it's going to get better. It's not. So when you go back to the very first things you've ever written that you've kept and you look at it, do you ever critique yourself or do you ever kind of think, I would rather rewrite that?
Yeah, I try not to go back too much. I mean, I guess if I'm doing like a reading or a signing or something, then I'll go back through the work and try to pinpoint what would make a good piece to read. Or if I'm collaborating with folks on like potential adaptations, when things like that come up, I'll look at the work. But otherwise, I try not to. It's painful. I'm always like, why did I write it that way? I just see the errors, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, going back to anthologies, when you get an anthology invite from an editor, do you find it easy or hard to come up with a story for a prompt? And is that I guess, do you find it, you know, enjoyable to write to a prompt?
I do, yeah. It depends on the anthology. Different editors have different processes and things like that. I did a story for a tribute.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Anthology to the Italian horror filmmaker Lucio Fulci, and those editors were incredibly involved, more than I've ever encountered in academic journals or otherwise. So they would look at multiple drafts and both editors would have suggestions and things like that. And that was, you know, that was fine. It was a different experience. But then I had another invite for an anthology dedicated to the theme of gluttony. And the editors were, you know, they were pretty they were committed, but they were hands off in the sense that they didn't look at drafts as I was going through it. That one, I ended up writing three different pieces before I landed on something I was happy with. So it varies. I mean, it's interesting that that first story I mentioned, Long Man, that I sold to Creepy Campfire Stories for Grownups, when I initially submitted that piece, it was a fragment from a novel, and it had all this extra detail from the frame narrative of the novel. And the editor basically said, I don't care about any of that surrounding stuff. Can you just write us an origin story about this monstrous figure of the Long Man? So my first story was kind of writing to a prompt in a way. Different challenges for different assignments, I suppose.
Shelter for the Damned. So tell us, how would you describe that book?
I would describe it as a pessimistic suburban coming of age novel with aspects of cosmic horror. It's heavily influenced by two writers who wouldn't normally fall under the definition of horror, Hubert Selby Jr. and Jim Thompson. particularly the way those writers align their narratives with protagonists who are consumed by their own demons. So I became very interested in the possibility of writing a coming-of-age narrative that doesn't result in any kind of positive transformation. In fact, it's a decline. It's this kid who does not see any room or space for himself in this world that he's entering, and it all goes to hell. You know, he is damned, in a sense.
Sounds like my story. getting my information out there. So what do you consider horror? Like, what's horrific for you?
I mean, the things that tend to scare me are real world threats, like the state of ecological catastrophe in the world, the fact that someone like Donald Trump can be elected president of the United States, the awful things that human beings do to each other, the ways that negotiations of power, especially when money is involved, result in terrible things. That stuff scares me. I actually find horror books and films quite comforting usually.
You think that's because it's not as real? And I mean, it's just not as direct. Like, you know, when you say Donald Trump gets in, that actually is happening. It's here, you know, and or it's happened. But, you know, or ecological or global warming or things like that, it's tangible. It's something that is existing, you know, like the pandemic. Whereas in the book, it's not so direct.
Yeah, I think the horror genre offers a way for us to process and engage with real world horror. I mean, primarily, I think what defines the horror genre is its self-defining affect. So it's the project of horror is to horrify, just to define it as broadly as possible. And then within that affective framework, there are so many different possibilities and subgenres and approaches. But I think at the foundation, that's what it's about.
Going back to Cosmic Horror, do you have any favorite Cosmic Horror authors, and how have they influenced you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm influenced by the granddaddy, H.P. Lovecraft, in a major way. Mm-hmm. He was probably the biggest influence on Shelter for the Damned in terms of the cosmic horror angle. But I was also inspired by people like William Hope Hodgson. Algernon Blackwood, I would say, is more weird horror, but I think there are elements of cosmic horror in his fiction. And Kathy Koja, her debut novel, The Cipher, I think also draws on that tradition. Ditto for Stephen King, something like It, I think, has elements of cosmic horror in that. So those were the people who consciously inspired this book in terms of cosmic horror.
Where else do you get your influences from other than some of those writers? Is there art, music, or Donald Trump? Like, where do you get your your influence from?
Donald Trump is anything but inspirational to me. yeah, definitely. Like, all everywhere, you know, music, film is a huge one. I've been writing film criticism for a long time as well, so I'm heavily influenced by cinema, visual art, conversations, daily news, dreams, memories. I just draw on everything. You kind of, as a writer, you train yourself to be a bit of a sponge and just soak up everything you can. Shelter for the Damned definitely drew a lot on some suburban horror films and just films set in the suburbs. Like, I was heavily inspired by people like Wes Craven and John Carpenter, and also Larry Clark, who did films like Kids and Bully and Ken Park. And some of the 1950s melodramas like Rebel Without a Cause, Tea and Sympathy. I drew from everywhere. And I also remember the way music I listened to in my youth made me feel. So I was listening to a lot of Alice Cooper, The Cure, Korn, Rob Zombie, things like that. So I listened to some of that music when I was drafting the novel too, to try and put me back in my adolescent headspace.
Are you able to write with music on, or do you have a hard time? I know I have a hard time writing with too many lyrics, or maybe too much of a beat. It seems to, I guess, drown out the voices in my head. Do you find you have a hard time with that, or is it very easy for you to write with music on, loud music, anything like that?
Usually I'll listen to something where the lyrics are either non-existent or indecipherable. So I'll either listen to ambient and drone and classical, like Brian Eno or Eric Satie, or I'll listen to like death metal or grindcore, like Carcass or Obituary, where you can't understand what they're saying. But yeah, when I'm editing, that's when I feel like I need to be really zoned in and surgical. So I usually edit in silence, but I'll write with music on sometimes.
Yeah, and for the voices in your head, there's medication, Dave. there is. You know, it's funny because I will have the radio on, the TV on, music going, and my dog's running around, and I'll be writing.
Wow.
Yeah, so I like to have all that. But I'm in that, it's a spectrum fog all the time, right? So, you know, being that way, it just doesn't, the world moves around me, so it doesn't matter. It's kind of strange. So where do you want to go with your writing?
I mean, I'm interested in exploring writing for film. I've recently become friends with Jamie Blanks, who directed the films Urban Legend and Valentine, and he and I are kind of batting around some ideas. That really excites me. I'd like to write another novel. I'm neck deep in a novel right now, and I am constantly murmuring incantations to the old ones in hopes that I will see my way out of it alive. And I'd like to continue short fiction as well, and film criticism. Just being able to keep doing it in some capacity. That's my goal, you know?
It's a pretty interesting world, I'll tell you. Now, do you have a website of your own that you promote yourself in?
Yeah, my website is MikeThornWrites.com. I'm also on Twitter at MikeThornWrites. I'm on Instagram at MikeThornWrites as well. I'm on Goodreads, Letterboxd, Facebook. I'm all over this strange world we refer to as the internet. Want to find me?
Tinder, Grindr, any of those?
No comment.
No comment. YouTube, Instagram private channel. No. I'll tell you, it's it is an interesting. What do you think of the publishing world now that it's so open? There's so many small publishers and self-publishing and all this stuff going on. Do you think it's made it better, or do you worry about it a little bit?
I think it's probably, in terms of the ratio of good to bad fiction, I would imagine it's probably the same as always. There's just a lot more of all of it. So there's a lot more bad stuff, but I think there's a lot more good stuff too, that's able to get out there through those avenues. Thankfully I've recently signed on with an agent, and that has been really helpful because she's able to help me navigate that world. Sometimes it's hard to find your way through it and determine where the right homes are for your work and things like that. I know it took me a while with Shelter for the Damned to find the right home for that book, but I'm so glad I finally did. Journalstone has been great to work with.
Yeah, I think that's the trick to it all. It is finding the right place to put your work out, and with the right audience. You know, that's usually the tough thing, because there's so much out there now, and there's no real gatekeepers or regulation to any of it, so it's all over the place.
Yeah, self-publishing is a strange world too. I mean, I don't really know a lot about it. It's not a world I've ever dipped my toes in. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's so much out there. And as a reader too, that can be overwhelming. I try my best to keep up to some degree with new new dark fiction and horror fiction, but I'm also always trying to catch up with the classics. So it's a lot of material.
And it's tough because as you get older, the hunger gets different, right? It's no longer the same as it was when you were first getting published.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it becomes different. And I think that the writing grows, you become better, and your goals change. And, you know, self-publishing is fine. I think it should only be done from someone that has been published.
Right.
You know, because then they understand they've got to have it edited properly and they understand the work involved to put out a good book.
Yeah, I mean, I've read some fantastic self-published stuff. I've read some not so fantastic self-published stuff. I don't know. It's a world I don't, like I said, I haven't explored personally, but I have read some self-published books that are better than some of the things being published through quote unquote legitimate vendors. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Cause the idea, the story and the writing can be good and it's getting the book out there. It's just, I guess it just all depends on how serious the writer takes it and how important it is for them to, you know, do a good piece and make sure everything's done correctly and stuff. And, you know, do you have a problem with that itself finishing the book, like when you have completed it, so to speak, but you go back and you kind of go, well, maybe I should change that or add this and do that. Do you have a point where you just have to say that's enough?
Yeah, I think we all have to arrive at that point eventually, because I think most writers, if they didn't, they would just never publish anything. So <Yeah. laughs> I usually have, you know, a few trusted readers who I ask to look at my work and offer suggestions. And I try to ask readers who tend to work within very different genres so that I'm getting a multitude of perspectives. With the novel, especially, though, with Shelter for the Damned, man, it was a long, long road, especially since I didn't pre-plan. Actually, the first draft of the novel was written kind of like an epic prose poem. I was too liberally inspired by the aforementioned Hubert Selby Jr., so I didn't use any punctuation aside from commas and slashes, and I had these concrete poetry sections where I would build the focal shack out of commas and slashes, and I had a really helpful writing mentor who I did a directed writings course with, and thankfully, he strongly encouraged me to rewrite the book in a more conventional, AKA a more readable, and maybe if I was lucky, a publishable book. It's changed a lot from its original form.
Yeah. Well, you know, but those trusted readers, you got to let them out of the basement. they're never going to tell you anything's bad if they're down there, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Or at least give them some water or bread.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are we driving into the woods? Let me go.
Yeah, exactly. I really should give them more water. It's
well, you know, that's the life of horror, you know. What can I say? Do you ever think of changing to a different style, a different type of writing, other like comedy? Does that interest you at all?
I mean, I think a lot of my stuff is kind of funny. I don't know if other people would feel that way, but... yeah, absolutely. I think I'll go wherever my creative, I don't know if you want to call it a muse, takes me. And so far, my muse tends to lead me into the dark corners. So that's fine. You know, I love the genre. I'm honored to be a part of it. I feel like I'm still a student of the genre. I feel like I'll always have a lot to learn about horror. So as long as I'm here, I'm happy. And if I find myself elsewhere, that's cool too.
Yeah, you'd be writing musicals soon.
Sure, why not? Why not? I don't have much of an ear, though. And I feel like I'd have to do some singing while I was writing. I also don't have a good sense of pitch.
Well, you know, get some of the people in the basement. I'm sure there's some
vocal coach down there.
Yeah, I'm
sure. Yeah.
If not, find one. It's not that hard, right? I mean, you know, it's pretty interesting. Anyway, it's a great world, and so Shelter for the Damned. Where is that found? Is that just in Amazon, or do you have it in bookstores now, or is it all available anywhere?
Yeah, Shelter for the Damned is available directly through the publisher, Journalstone. You can also get it on Amazon or through Walmart or through Barnes & Noble. So it's around.
Well, it would be if it's in Walmart. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's fantastic to talk to a good writer. Your latest book, Shelter for the Damned, available now. It's going to be on our website as well, so people listening can pick it up with one click. We'll have the guest author, Mike Thorne. We're going to have his website up as well, and Tinder, YouTube, whatever we can find. Well, thank you for being here, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun chatting with you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.